Welcome to the third attempt at a commentary track for Lady in the Water. On the count of three, you should push play on your DVD menu. One, two, three.
All right. I feel good about this one. This is going to work.
Third time's charm.
Indeed.
For some frightening sequences.
Yeah. So before Jeff tells the lie for the third time, let's
Which
explain
lie?
Why we're doing a commentary track for Lady in the Water. I'm pretty sure it started as a, it's basically just kind of a drunken suggestion of, you know what we should do, is do commentary tracks of the worst movie ever made. Let's do Lady in the Water. And somehow
as
we wound
up doing
it.
It was you saying, you did Shattered Glass to me, I'm doing Lady in the Water to you.
I love Shattered Glass, why would I not want to do
but
that?
But you hadn't seen it.
No, I had.
It
was the other one. It was the Loch Ness movie that I hadn't seen.
Yeah. Mike has seen Lady in the Water, and welcome back to these, Mike.
It's great to be here.
And I have not seen it. This seems awfully primitive to me and bizarrely not, like, authentically primitive.
Well, it started as a, it started as a bedtime story told by M. Night to his chillens, is what I understand. So far, I was okay with it.
Have you liked any movie of his?
Not yet. I come the closest with The Sixth Sense. Is that right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I come closest because I really dig Haley Joel Osment and Toni Collette. I think they really get at some kind of scary good places. I don't think the movie itself is... And it's got some creepy stuff in it. The movie itself I don't think is very good. I don't like Unbreakable. I really didn't like Signs. I really didn't like The Village, and this I just loathed. So,
what did you think of the Rosie O'Donnell one?
I didn't see it. Yeah. There are some things even I say no to. Nah,
we actually have seen it.
Yeah.
It's called, Wide Awake.
Wide Awake, yeah.
We have seen it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't remember why. It must have been one of those lapses on Netflix.
Yeah.
I think a beginning like this is really problematic. It's like in what was the Clint Eastwood movie with about Boston?
Mystic River.
When you start a movie with kid actors, it usually strikes a wrong note right at the outset to me, and I think that kind of that fake primitive cave drawing stuff strikes a wrong note with me right off the bat.
I keep thinking they're just trying for Watership Down and they're never going to get there because, Watership Down is perfect.
I actually watched the Watership Down movie, the crappy cartoon.
My favorite line's coming up here. Oh, yeah, here we go.
Now, Paul Giamatti, I think Under the Right Direction, is a good actor. I also think he can be dreadful. I think he was...
There's no such thing as creatures. Okay, that's where it started for me, and it just went downhill from there.
I thought he was terrible in The Illusionist, and early indications aren't very good here.
I thought he was fantastic in The Illusionist, and I'm curious as to why you didn't think so.
In fairness, I didn't like The Illusionist generally.
Uh-huh.
But he seemed...
That's over.
It seemed like all the mannerisms were so deliberate, they were so actorly, that I had... that it was difficult to buy them. My God, all those people are short. Or is it just the way it shot?
I think there's a vague joke there that it's a whole bunch of people shorter than Giamatti, but I have no idea. Oh, here we go. Cleveland Heap, the book and movie critic who just moved to town.
Is that the closest an M. Night movie ever came to sex?
Right there?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's still kind of like 60s teeny bopper sex.
Overly mannered. My ginger?
No, we're good. I'm holding the line this time. There should be no more stopping. I'm not watching this much again for a fourth time.
Mr. Heat loves
I genuinely like
I understand she also so horny, just so you know.
Love you a long time?
A little bit, yeah.
I actually like Unbreakable quite a lot, or liked Unbreakable quite a lot. Yeah. I haven't seen it in years. I had a lot of problems with Sixth Sense. Is it okay to be watching this without paying a whole lot of attention, because I'm not going to be able to pay a whole lot of attention and still talk?
No, that's great. Pick up what you can.
Is it is it in any way dense, as in
compact? There's a lot of stuff that's happening, you know. I mean, none of it means anything, but I mean, if you want to like learn who the tenants are, this is all important, you know what I mean? It's a Rear Window kind of apartment complex with a whole bunch of, except we get to meet them. They all have one personality trait. You know, here we go.
They all have the same personality trait?
This is the book and film critic. No, they're all different. They're all that one different thing.
They all have one personality trait. Yeah. And I thought, does that mean they all have
that's just badly worded? I'm sorry. Yeah, they all have their one personality trait.
Rico!
I'm going to ask a stupid question. Why does M. Night make movies?
Because he has stuff he wants to tell people. That's why anyone makes movies. It's like, I have this vision for this piece of art that I want to make, you know, unless you just want to make it because you want to make money. But
I guess what's troubling to me is he really does seem to think, I assume that's prosthetic.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And not so good either.
Most people who fancy themselves artists are not nearly so awful as he is.
But
I mean, he's self-deluded.
Yeah, but well, except he's a popular artist. I mean, that's different. That's not Lars von Trier. That's Steven Spielberg. He's just not Spielberg. He thinks he is. He would love to be one day.
I don't see. I think a popular artist is in many ways an oxymoron. I do not think of Steven Spielberg as an artist. And I don't think... I think he's a craftsman. I think even at his peak, even at his most serious peak, which I would consider Schindler's List, he's a craftsman. I mean, it's...
Can you name me a craftsman painter? Someone you consider a craftsman painter?
If I would...
Or a craftsman musician. I mean, anything.
I think most of pop music is craftsmanship.
Okay, all right.
Of course, that's like defining something by saying it is, like saying X is X, I have defined it.
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
Pop music is pop as opposed to art. I don't think there's a craft to pure pop music. There's not much art to it.
Okay, well then you and I fundamentally disagree on what art is. I think I think art is anything that you create.
So, but if we get beyond our definitions, if
the local film and book critic for the paper. Oh, did you now? Okay,
it's just one of the elements of his movies that's always been troubling to me is how defensive they are toward critics right at the outset, and that happens the way he creates twists so that you can't actually talk about the movie.
Yeah, it's not defensive,
essentially, it's like, what did you say?
It's hostile. It really is.
Well, it is here, but I mean, it's like he wants to cut off not only your balls, but your hands and out in your tongue so that you can't actually talk about the movie in any meaningful way.
Oh, but we do find ways, don't we?
Yes.
So he ain't winning.
I mean,
you know. I see what you mean.
How can you reasonably? I mean, if you're in such a spoiler sensitive culture, how can you reasonably talk about The Sixth Sense or Unbreakable or The Village? You can't talk about them in any real way.
You throw a spoiler alert at the beginning. That's what you.
Well, except it's not just giving away important plot details. To talk about those movies, you have to talk about the endings.
Right, yeah.
And you can't, even with a spoiler alert, you're not allowed to do that.
Yeah, it's fair. Absolutely. Yeah, some movies are really crashed, absolutely, by their finale. Certainly his are. I guess I ended up hating The Sixth Sense so much the first time I saw it is because I guessed that in the first 5 minutes. Spoiler alert, he's dead.
I'm a little more of a sucker than you are, so I didn't see it. But
Oh, but I'm obtuse. I don't see things quickly, and I, you know, well, so that's...
Nor do I.
Yeah.
Of course, if you couldn't tell that something important was going to happen in the water, the focus right there could tell you, because...
Yeah. Well, it is a bedtime story for children, with really horrible sexual innuendo and...
So, if it's a bedtime story for children, does that mean you essentially excuse? You say, yeah, I know it's blunt and not very subtle, but
yep.
I had to do that because
that's what he wants. That's what he wants. He wants to cut your balls off right off the bat by saying, it's for kids. It's a story I told my children.
See, and that's the difference between Spielberg and... Spielberg is never defensive.
Right. He's open-hearted.
Even when I hate Spielberg's movies, or think they're deeply, deeply flawed, mm-hmm. I would never accuse him of being cynical.
Right.
You can't be an artist and be responding to critics.
Whether you believe in
art or craftsmanship or whatever, you can't do that honestly. You can't seriously call yourself that and then be so sensitive or try to cut yourself off from criticism or try to prevent criticism.
Yeah.
And make it an element of your work.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, we expect that of Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin when they had, the Mayor Ebert with the, and his
Sure, well, his Lucas friend did it. Lucas did it in fucking Willow, you know, where he has General Kale, you know. I mean, that's, you know, come on, that's been, yeah.
I don't get it.
Pauline Kael.
I'm kidding.
Oh, okay. Well, they might not get it. Did you get it, folks? If not... We have nothing to do with you.
Let the record show that I do have a Pauline Kael book in the film bookshelf, which is directly across from my...
Yeah, you do. All right, good. As well you should. Oh, you got that one. All right.
I think I'd probably like 5,000 Nights at the Movies, probably a little more. What would you recommend as a Pauline Kael book so that people actually get something out of this?
Oh, the best one, I want to say, is called Reeling. I can't remember if that's the one. It's whatever book covers 72 to 74.
Well, Four Keeps is essentially the entirety.
But you don't get... Well, yes, you're right. Four Keeps is a great, great book. It has all of her most important ones, for sure. Yeah.
Hence the eye rolling when you saw which one it was.
No. I thought that was 5,001 Nights at the Movies, which is fine. But it's you know, capsules, and at the end of the day, capsules don't mean anything. Yeah.
Is there a twist at the end of this?
No. Okay. This one's twistless.
Which I guess we could call progress, eh?
Well, sure. I guess there's no way you're gonna. Except he's already blown it. There's no way we're going to give his next three or four movies. It's going to be, so what's the twist this time? That's all anyone will ask for a while, because that was his gimmick for so long.
I mean, it got to the point where, well, the twist is disappointing. And now it's, well, there's no twist. He's painted himself mm-hmm. into a corner.
Yeah. And what's sad is, though, he's becoming a really reductive... he's getting more and more in this kind of burrowed hole of kind of childlike-y... wonder, and he wants to be Spielberg really bad. He's wanted
Instead
ever since he's that
George
movie.
Lucas.
Was it the Newsweek cover during Signs that said, is this our next Spielberg? He was on the cover of either Time or Newsweek with Signs, and it said, our new Spielberg. Like George Bush, when they plastered his picture on the fucking cover saying, President Bush, fucking happened, you know?
It's the reverse of the Sports Illustrated.
I think he's starting to believe his own bullshit, you know, and that's the worst thing you can do as an artist, is to believe your bullshit, you know? To believe you are as great as everyone thinks you are. In case we're missing any plot details, this is a Narf. Her name is Story. This is the Narf Story. Just
enjoy the hair while you got it, girl. You're going to be bald in 10 years.
Oh wait, she's... You know, that's hurtful. Yeah. Not incorrect, maybe, but...
She's Ron Howard's kid.
Oh, yeah.
And just so you know, you can't hide being bald with a baseball cap all the time.
Yeah. Every director thinks you can. Oh, isn't that funny? She's a Narf named Story.
And of course, Narf backwards is Fran.
Fran, yeah.
Well, Fran, I suppose. I'm cool with something starting out as a bedtime story for your children. But what is the point of telling this story? I mean, obviously he has something to say about the violence in our culture, which is a theme that he did in The Village as well. And
I'm not sure that enters this one, to be honest. I'm trying to think of where it might.
Oh, no, right at the beginning when it's...
Oh, the whole... Yeah.
Yeah, but we became violent and...
Yeah, he's got a thing, yeah. I'm trying to think of if there is a point to this one. It's I don't think it is, except... I don't
Hello,
know.
Cleveland!
Right.
That's a spell. Oh,
this woman might never work again.
That's not true. I think she's completely naked in the Lars von Trier movie.
Yes. She'll never work again.
The sequel to Dogville in which she plays Nicole Kidman as a younger person. Which was called...
Kim went so fast. I don't know. Not here, of course. It didn't come here at all. But.
Okay, so
she's a very
so he tells a story to his kids. He writes a script. And who greenlights the project? And what actors decide that, you know, this is really pretty cool?
There's actually a whole book on the making of this movie.
I know, I'm aware of that. I know.
Yeah.
It's a, but it was written. It's kind, well, of, kind of like M. Night versus the World, isn't it?
Yeah, from what I understand. Or at least M. Night feels he's against the world, and this author's going, I'm not so sure about that. That's what it sounds like. It could be a really fascinating read, actually. But I mean, this is what happens when you think that your shit don't stink, you know, when all of a sudden you buy your bullshit. It's like, no, it's a fucking story I told my kids, and my movies have made so many goddamn billions of dollars for your studio. You know, at some point you got to say, well, would it kill us if we spent $50 million on this thing? You know. No, it's just killing us, it turns out. Yeah, Paul, a little unseemly for you to be, you know, 50 and hanging out with the 10-year-old, but whatever.
I think he's... I don't recall the box office on this movie, but it didn't do well, which follows The Village, which didn't do well, which followed Signs, which did fine. But
really
I don't know that any. I don't know that many people. There aren't many people who. I mean, the Signs was had a moronic ending, and The Village, and by all accounts and by all early indications, this are just dreadful beginning to end.
Yeah.
Although I think there were some interesting ideas in The Village that were kind of screwed up by the need to make it a twisty movie.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you and I both talked that, you know, the twist should have been the plot, you know. Now you got something interesting.
Right,
know?
And I think the same could arguably said about Unbreakable. It's a really interesting treatment of a superhero to look at them and to strip them of all superhero affectations and essentially look at somebody who is just unnatural in some way that makes them... physically superior, and to then look at them in completely human terms.
Right.
And I think he kind of find there. I thought he found the right balance between foreshadowing and indicating what the twist was and its culmination. But generally, he has when he has interesting ideas, he avoids exploring them by the way he structures the movies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't... I think in the end he's probably just not that good at his job, you know? I think he's...
Which
got
job?
A lot
writer,
of ideas.
Director?
Well, I don't think he can... I think he's a fine director. I think he can't write for anything. I think his writing is terrible. His dialogue is atrocious, but beyond that, I think his ideas are basically bad about, like, what local color is and what flavor is and what character exposition is. I think he's... doesn't do it well. Like this introduction of all the people in the apartment complex in this movie, it's like, okay, you know, one after another, it's thudding, it's one after another. Here's this person and their quirky physical type, their quirky personality type that you need to remember for the entire 2 hours. We're going to blast it in your face so that you make sure not to forget he's the weirdo who sits at his desk all day and he's the guy who's only lifting weights with one arm, you know, and here's the screechy Mexican family who's afraid of a caterpillar in their sink. You know, when they're all 4'1", by the way. Ha ha! You know, it's like,
it's wacky Mexicans. They're very short.
They're very short and they're afraid of bugs, you know, so, yeah. There's nowhere for a dumb big animal to hide. That's not even good sentence structure. A dumb big animal. People wouldn't say a dumb big animal. You'd say a big dumb animal. That's just, you know. It pays no attention to cadence or the way people speak. That's why the actors come out looking so bad in his movies, is they're not saying things a person would say, you know.
So what happened? I think most people think that The Sixth Sense... There aren't many people who think The Sixth Sense is a dreadful movie. They, mm-hmm. I think most people think that... that some people love it. Mm-hmm. Some people think it's... I think there's one seriously problematic scene, but why was it that it generated... I mean, did something happen to him as a movie maker after that he became a lesser...
Yeah, he bought his bullshit. This thing made $300 million in the U.S. alone, you know? It's killed everywhere else. I think he just thought that I know better than you people now. And if you want my stuff again, you're going to let me do more my way. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he had people working on his script with him for The Sixth Sense and fixing things maybe that he didn't want fixed, but he grudgingly went, ugh. And those people might have been very right about these things to do. All of a sudden, I mean, like this, if this is just an M. Night Shyamalan, this is a story I told my kids, I'm going to work on the script, I'm going to give it to you, it's going to be great, you know, and it's just, trust me, that's Heaven's Gate book. Is nothing but that. It's just people, suits, who just kept throwing money at the genius because he can't be wrong, right? And didn't know what the fuck they were doing.
My point about asking about The Village and Signs, though, was he can do wrong, and he obviously could do wrong.
But Signs made 200-something million in the U.S. alone, too, you know, I mean...
And it pissed people off because it was so stupid.
Who's telling him that? No one's telling him that.
I think test audiences did.
I would highly doubt it. He's, you know, this thing sells $200 million. No one's going to call him up and say, by the way, Signs thought you were shit. Not among his people and among people in Hollywood. That's a money town.
But then you have The Village, which tanked at the box office.
Still made $50 million here, $50-plus million here, more than that abroad. That's $100-plus million before we get to DVD and cable and Netflix. That's fine.
You probably know the actual gross down to a single...
I don't at all. I don't follow grosses, to be honest, but I know that made over $50 million in the U.S. You know, I mean, $100 million, they're still going to give you money for your fucking Lady in the Water script. Absolutely. We know it's shit, but, you know, he's not our next-door neighbor, and, you know, we're not greenlighting his next project. But, you know, what do they care if it sucks if people are showing up, you know? They might think twice now, because I'm sure this cost a bundle, and, you know, again, it made probably 35, 40 in the U.S., you know, make probably 25 overseas. Maybe it'll lose a little, but probably not a lot. They'll give him money for his next one, even though this is an enormous pile of dog shit, you know.
Didn't you bring it over?
Yeah, I rented it.
You rented it, okay.
Yeah. It's my contribution to the party.
You owned it.
Oh, fuck, no. No, no, no. Yeah, the old Chinese woman knows a lot about NARFs.
Well, because her mother knew. Or her mother's mother.
Yes. No, because it's an ancient Chinese secret.
Ah.
It's just like that laundry detergent.
That's right.
She won't.
Is somebody who is a racial minority, does that entitle him to essentially stereotype all races?
Yes, apparently so. Absolutely. Yeah.
Right, the slutty Chinese girl. And
he treats the Mexicans horribly. He treats the Asian Americans horribly in this movie. Jeffrey Wright gets let off in a pass, probably because he just said, back off, because he's that fucking cool. But, yeah,
So she's in underwear. All the movies she's in.
Yeah, it's her thing.
It's a back of the knee double, clearly.
Nothing I like less than having a naked 17-year-old girl in my house.
Yeah, poor Paul.
Yeah.
Well, but you see, he's got a webcam, so he's going to get prosecuted, probably.
Mm-hmm.
She's not a human being, though, so technically...
No, she's a NARF named Story.
So if her name is meaningful, then his name must be meaningful as well. So he is representing the urbanity of the world, and hence our separation from nature.
Sure, okay.
Except
we haven't even gotten to his role in the movie yet, which is my absolute favorite part of the movie.
Well, we've already been told his name means something about cliffs, high cliffs or sea cliffs.
Oh, yeah, he's an adventurer or something, I think.
Well, I think we learn a little bit about nepotism. She is bizarre looking in that profile view in a way that I couldn't imagine her getting film work on her own without being the child of Ron Howard.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of her yet. What was the other thing that she was in that was like her big thing?
I don't think she was bad in The Village.
The Village, that was like her breakthrough movie, right?
Yeah, she was actually pretty good, probably.
Which she was pretty good, right, yeah.
Because that really sucked.
And I think she's playing everything correctly in this, you know. I can't blame her for anything she does in this. She's just playing this idiotic role.
I was just saying she's a little strange looking.
Yeah, but, yeah. But, again, she could have a career playing strange-looking, absolutely. And transcendent, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's like Ileana Douglas strange-looking.
Yeah.
But this is meant to be, I mean, this is sort of...
otherworldly strange.
Well, it's also fetishizing her in a way that's...
Oh, here we go. She wants to learn from the critic. What does the critic have to teach us?
How's it going? I'm seeing a romance film tonight. Not my cup of tea. So you haven't written anything. Well, I haven't written anything for some time. You were right about that 110?
What's with these center close-up faces?
I think it's Kubrick now, I guess.
It's a way of two-shotting this conversation.
I'm okay with that, just because at least it's different, but it is, you know, it brings attention to itself in a way that...
center in the camera, on the frame, is going to be, is actually, has a disconcerting effect, because it makes you uncomfortable, and especially when you're that close up, I think.
Yeah, it's got a little Jonathan Demme in it, too, from Silence of the Lambs. It's got a little bit of that off-putting, a lot of Kubrick in that, of course.
I understand that you're all right.
What did you like about him in The Illusionist, to just flip that question around?
Oh, I thought he was fabulously committed to it. I thought he was absolutely in character, in period, and gave a tremendously interesting kind of out there performance. I thought it was huge and risky and exciting. I thought I enjoyed him more in that than I have in years, probably since Sideways. I really liked him. He felt very Javert and Les Mis to me in a
more Javert than Jeffrey Rush. Wasn't he Javert in that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't find Jeffrey Rush a very interesting actor in general. I think he's fine. I believe him.
Sort of facetious.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. You gotta tell me when you're gonna do things like that. No, prepare.
Face tidy alert.
Oh, poor Jeffrey Rush. Why is he in this?
So obviously his obsession with writing is something to do with. I assume that his role in the movie is to tell the story.
Oh no, it's much better than that. Oh yeah, this is another one of the funny apartment dwellers. I got a whole bunch of stone guys in one apartment. You know, we got Chinese people and Mexicans and stoners too, and a film and book critic for the local paper,
and a writer.
Yes, and a writer who's
and two Golden Globes.
You know?
Oh wait, those are lamps. Never mind.
Yeah, they did look pretty.
The guy in the middle right there. Obviously, they should have cast Mark Boone Jr.
Except he's too old to be in that group.
Well, the guy in the middle doesn't look to be... He doesn't look young. Something important? The guy in the...
Orange?
No, the guy next to the
guy. Stop
putting your clothes in the garbage disposal and stop smoking.
Oh, he just became Giamatti for a moment.
The guy to the right of the guy in orange.
Yeah.
The guy and the wife, Peter.
Yes. I was just clarifying.
Yeah, we're fucked up! Oh! Really? Before she throw cushion at me.
Because that's what pissed off Chinese mothers do.
Yeah, they throw cushion at me.
My question about who greenlighted this, who decided, you know, I really want to be in this movie. If Paul Giamatti saw this script and saw that he had to say, paper?
Right, yeah.
I mean, wouldn't any decent actor say, fuck no, I'm not doing that shit?
Yeah, but I, you know,
unless you're really
I don't know. You know, how awful would it be to get the call to star in an M. Night Shyamalan movie? That would not be a shitty phone call. You can believe all the things that he would tell you where it's like, I'm going to fix the script. I know that it's got problems. We'll deal with it. It might just be a thing that they just never got around to fixing, and Giamatti went, what the fuck am I in? Who knows? But I know I wouldn't turn down the lead in a Giamatti flick, would you? I mean, if you were an actor starting out in, you know? Seriously, actors do things for all sorts of reasons, and there are much worse reasons to do something than M. Night Shyamalan's directing it. Jeffrey Wright is in the cast.
I can see what Johnny Depp did when somebody came to him with Pirates of the Caribbean. A chance to be hammy, a chance to... But that script wasn't bad, and obviously he would be slumming in a movie not worthy of his talents in most ways. But mm-hmm. he would see, I could see an attraction outside of the name and the allure it held in 1999, and maybe as recently as 2001. I just can't see somebody like Paul Giamatti, who's, you know, been on essentially an escalator of esteem and fame for several years. It doesn't seem like a smart choice, even before the movie was universally panned.
Yeah, but by the same token, I mean, how on earth do we know how this began? How do we, you know, how do we know that the character started with a lisp? I haven't read the book. Maybe he didn't, and maybe into filming he was like, you know what, I think your character should have a lisp.
A stutter.
A stutter, yeah.
Okay. I mean,
seriously, there's no way of knowing. I find it really hard to blame actors for choices because at the end of the day, you're an actor, you want to work. You just want to work. And if you're getting paid a lot of money to work, and you're getting paid to work for an Oscar-nominated director and writer, and you're fronting a movie when you look like Paul Giamatti in the year 2006 and they're casting him as a lead, this is progress. This counts, you know, that they didn't go with someone more conventional or, to be particular, conventionally handsome. Fuck yeah, you know. I'm sorry it's a loser, but he's also an actor and he knows it's a loser, whatever, I go on to another job. That's just an actor mentality, you know. I mean, it's not about, you know... It's great when you have a career that you can kind of preserve your dignity in, but, you know, name the one who's got the spotless record. Well, James Dean. And there's a reason for that, so.
It's interesting to me that if you're a motion picture actor these days, mm-hmm. You know, in our profession, if we have a really bad issue, in a week, it's largely gone.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's on the web and shit like that, but it's
we
not.
Carry it.
But it's pretty much disappears.
Yeah.
When you're an actor, it's preserved in digital perfection forever now.
Yeah, but our paper is preserved that way exactly the same way. Giamatti doesn't sit around watching Lady in the Water. People who like Giamatti movies probably aren't watching Lady in the Water
but
either.
My point is that there's... The consumption cycle for our product mm-hmm. is 1 week.
Okay.
And obviously the consumption cycle for a movie is when it's first it's theatrical release, mm-hmm. followed by its initial DVD release. But then, you know, there's a fairly steady, and then when it shows up on HBO or Cinemax, and then mm-hmm. again when it shows up on television, but there's a... I think it's a lot steadier and over a much greater period of time. I'm not saying this is something that's really worth talking about for an extended period of time, but I think it's interesting that you really can't take a mulligan as an actor in film.
Oh, I think you can easily. It just takes longer. I mean, again, every 70, 60-year-old actor will tell you, oh, my God, I made a whole bunch of shit. The time it took to make that shit's a long part of your life. I mean, yeah, we're talking 6 months out of your life, a year of your life, you know, where you're known for that piece of shit, Gigli, you know, whatever you want to, an example you want to use, but it goes away. It just becomes part of a package deal. It becomes part of life's work. A bad issue with the reader will just join hundreds of other issues of the reader, and at some point it'll be like, oh, yeah, I remember that bad one. Yeah, there's that good one, too. You know, and it just becomes an anecdote in your life. It's, I'd be, like, if I was in Lady in the Water and just got trashed as badly as that movie did, you know, yeah, it would probably hurt you. But by the same token, by the time you finished filming a year and a half ago, oh, fuck, I've done 3 movies since then. Whatever. You know,
Hey,
maybe not M. Night so much, but, oh, here we go.
Oh, we didn't even notice that was him before.
Oh, yeah. He's just that subtle.
That's not the first time we met him?
No, mm-hmm. He was
folding laundry with his sister.
Yeah. Oh, there was a time before that, too, that you guys missed, where he was walking down the hallway, and Giamatti walking past goes, how's your writing coming? Writer.
Yeah, I missed that.
When he's been going to apartment to apartment looking for writers and forgets he knows one. Jackass.
Here we go. On a related topic, is it you probably can relate, never having been a part of long-term projects, is it hard to spend 6 weeks or 6 months doing something that you know is less than you want it to be, beneath you, however it's disappointing,
mm-hmm.
when you know right off the bat that it's going to be disappointing, when you don't need money? I mean, obviously I think that's a context that has to be raised here, because mm-hmm. Paul Giamatti, I assume, is not hurting.
Well, again, we don't know.
Right.
I don't know what his debts are. Fair enough, you know. Well, what kind of project are you talking about?
I'm thinking of, like, something at Circa where...
Which sucks.
Well, where you didn't like the show.
Yeah, sure.
You know, is it hard?
No, because I love performing.
Okay.
I love performing that much. It doesn't matter. I'll perform my heart out in something that sucks ass.
Okay.
Absolutely. I know actors probably who do, and they'll go in and give shitty performances. I mean, you don't like what you're doing, it reads, you know. I always made sure it looked at least like I was having a good time.
What do you think about, do you think Giamatti gave up on this?
No, I think he's doing it again. I don't really fault any actors. I think they're all. I think even the shrieking Mexicans are giving M. Night exactly the performance he wants. I don't blame them. No praise, because what he wants is ungodly awful. You know, yeah. But again, like right now, Bryce Howard is phenomenally uninteresting. But she's doing that kind of spectral. Oh, I don't want you to know anything about me acting that I think he wanted for that role. So. You know, it makes her look stupid, but it makes him look worse, you know. Whenever I see, like, a really bad stage show right now, I mean, I go, the director's the one who gets the brunt of it. It's like, how did you let this slip, you know? I mean, you're the one that we go to. Oh, look, she doesn't look at all like a caricature. She's a little Jewish, just in case. Oh, forget it, darling, we're fine. Oh, Jesus.
Hi. Cleveland's here. He's come to fix the show.
So if you're... Who's that performer?
I don't know.
She looks like she... Like, oh, we want Stalker Channing, but we can't get Stalker Channing, so...
Right.
We'll hire this one.
Yeah.
If it's meant as a bedtime story, meant to be taken that way, oughtn't it have, to a certain degree, the texture of a bedtime story? And what I mean by that is, this is... overpopulated for a bedtime story.
Oh, yeah.
I mean...
It's confusing,
If you want to try to recreate that, you almost need to pare it down.
Absolutely, yeah. This is just hyperactive. This is far too many characters.
I mean, I think that's one thing about, say, The Princess Bride, which explicitly recalls a bedtime story and is obviously more humorous than this. But it's... you know, it's a handful of characters. I mean, you're talking about, what, six?
Well, the thing is, Princess Bride probably has, as far as, like, major characters, I'd say about 12, but they don't shove them all in your face in the first 5 minutes and then expect you to follow all of them. It's like, you know, you will have Billy Crystal show up at some point, or you'll have, you know, Wallace Shawn, or he's been killed off.
Well,
you know,
but Billy Crystal's a very small part of it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It never feels overly populated. You basically follow the princess and, you know, and
Humperdinck.
And Humperdinck, and Wesley, and a few others, and then of course the grandfather and the child.
Another thing is, I think there's the overpopulation issue. The second issue is who populates their bedtime stories with ethnic stereotypes?
Yes,
I mean the Princess Bride has the four fingered man, and you know
six fingered man.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know it better than I do.
Indeed, I'm a girl of a right age.
Makes me
Princess
Savage, doesn't it?
Everybody loves Princess Bride. Yeah.
Yes. My mother doesn't.
Really? Huh. Well, my mother doesn't either, but she doesn't like it.
Now, that's kind of like in The Departed, where there are those little jump cuts that serve no apparent reason and aren't in any way consistent.
Well, what do you mean by consistent?
Oh, well, I mean, like in The Birds, there's only one jump cut, and it's when she goes to the farmer's house and she sees he's got his eyes pecked out, and he goes, jump, jump, jump. Closer into the face.
Sure. Right.
So it's just used once for effect. But in the Departed, there's one near the beginning. There's one when he's packing. And it's just like, well, you know what? When a guy's got his eyes pecked out, why did the jump cut? Because that's the first truly shocking moment that person experiences. But he was emptying the garbage on the third floor, and then he was on the fourth floor. I mean,
I think that was about the. It's the monotony of, it could just as easily be on the third floor as the fourth floor, and he's going.
But it's a very disorienting. The ways to express monotony, that's a very disorienting way to.
But why is disorienting bad necessarily? I don't agree that it is.
Disorienting, it can be very good. It can serve a narrative purpose. When you're. I mean, I don't like the jump cuts in The Departed, but I can at least understand that given how aggressive the editing is in that movie overall, that part of its purpose is to keep you on edge.
The only time I noticed that kind of jump cutting in The Departed is when people are performing a business that we don't have to sit and watch the entire business being performed in. We don't have to see the packing of the suitcase or whatever is going on. It's like, no, we just need to know it opens, clump, shut. It's getting rid of extraneous business. The rest of that movie is either something that's, you know, a plot that we kind of need to watch every moment happen, or it's a dialogue scene where the jump cuts of this sort wouldn't make any sense. But if we're just watching a standard action and all we need to know about this is, you know, he packs a suitcase, well, then great, just show us highlights.
But that's like, I don't agree with that, because I think there are more elegant ways. I think jump cutting is a way of condensation. It's not a very elegant solution, in my opinion.
Okay, what would you do instead? I mean, what should he have done instead, I guess?
I guess if you need to see that he's packing, you show 2 seconds of it and leave it at that, rather than show 10 seconds and jump to 5 seconds ahead and show 5 more seconds and then jump 5 more seconds ahead.
Okay, but isn't this just a different way of doing a scene that we've seen a billion times? Isn't there something to be said for showing?
I guess arguably, I'd say if it's so unimportant that you're trying to essentially hack it up to make it shorter, I'd try to get rid of it completely. I don't necessarily think it's very important at all.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, if we do need a scene to see him packing a suitcase, for instance, just because we as an audience need to know that information that he's leaving, for instance, and you have this and you're like, well, how do we make this more interesting than usual?
I wouldn't want to make it more interesting. I'd want to convey the information in the most efficient way possible.
Yeah, but you like efficiency. I mean, that's your thing. I do like compact.
That's very true.
All right.
But I think the editing in The Departed, and this is actually, I think it was David Bordwell who I don't think he's doing his original reporting, but he's basically shown that Scorsese's movies have gotten more heavily edited over time, but especially from the 90s on, that the average shot length had got markedly shorter from the movies from the 70s and the 80s. Mm-hmm. And I felt The Departed was almost disjointed and far too aggressively edited. And I think you can justify that. I think it makes sense given the emotional tone of the movie. I didn't like it, but I can understand it. Here, to go back to we've been talking 5 minutes about that stupid little jump cut. it doesn't seem to serve the story. I mean, we can argue about whether we like it or not in The Departed, but it's clearly serving the tone of the story.
Yeah.
And I agree with you about the monotony issue, about it showing it could just have easily been the third or fourth floor, but it creates an unease emotionally in the audience, and so I think it fails. And monotony isn't about, it's about being comfortable, so...
Yeah, monotony is, but an M. Night Shyamalan movie is not. I mean, an M. Night is about keeping you alert all the time, waiting...
They are said to look like monkeys.
Oh yeah, monkeys.
Monkeys.
Yeah.
They are said to look like monkeys. That is a really... Whoever chose that, whoever their location scout is, that is a really cool back of an apartment building.
Oh, it's fabulous. I'm sure it was constructed.
I don't know, but
I'm betting they constructed it.
I don't think it fits the class structure. I mean, the class of people who were in that apartment building.
No, I would live there in a heartbeat. Are you fucking kidding? With a pool in the back? Fuck yeah, look, it's
cool
beautiful. It's beautiful, yeah. I just think a different ethnic stereotype in every one of those apartments.
Wow.
We haven't even met, like, the Poles or the, you know, Shiites. I'm sure they're fun.
I actually don't think... my guess is it's not an apartment building, but it's probably a hotel.
Yeah. I guess I'll have to watch the 6-part documentary now and find out. I'm excited.
Enjoy.
Oh, and not since Shelley Winters in The Poseidon Adventure, friends, if we had anyone hold their breath this long underwater. Now, go a little further. There you go.
So this is obviously the birth canal of Mother Earth, right?
Well, obviously, right?
Holy crap.
You might want to resurface for a little air. No, you're okay? Okay. A little bit deeper, you're fine.
He's been working on his lung capacity.
Yeah, he's doing good, I tell you. Oh, he had no idea, right at the bottom of his pool. Who would have thought?
Now, Mike, you hated or did not care for The Descent, but you have not
seen... No, I thought The Descent was fine.
You haven't seen the proper ending.
Well, I thought, aren't there like 5 or 7?
No, there's just one.
Oh, okay.
And it was everywhere except for the American theatrical cut.
Yeah, but the stuff I didn't like about the movie was in the first half hour. I mean, after that, I was okay with it.
But the ending is kind of brings all that. It's off topic.
Is it vastly better than the old ending?
Yes.
So
it's
better that it will.
It woke me up in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And kept me up for 3 hours.
Wow. I don't have time to watch the movies I like generally again. So probably won't make the list.
The ending.
It's like 30 seconds.
Oh, I could live with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's 30 seconds longer. That's it.
Yeah.
I'm just trying
to remember how the original ended.
This is unbelievable.
Oh, no, he's still going. And he's opening his mouth, you know, and stuff. But it just does keep going.
What is he doing?
Oh, getting air. Right. See, now everything's better.
Are you kidding?
Why is he down there? I'm obviously not.
Oh, he has to get the key.
The mud to heal the scratches.
It's kind of like that Atari game that you had to, you know, go find the thing. There we go.
Pitfall?
Nah, it was one that you had to... It was a kingdom-ish game, and you went down holes, and you found keys, and just castles. Keep going, Paul. You're doing good. No, you're fine.
I know what you're
talking
about.
That was a big air bubble from a little glass of...
And based on, I've been faulting Paul Giamatti, I think he was wonderful in American Splendor.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's still his best piece.
Is anybody paying attention to how long it really was?
Nah. Gosh, I couldn't even imagine.
I'm thinking 4 minutes.
That sounds about right. But he did get that straw full of air. So
he did. And then promptly blew out a giant bottle.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he's pretty gifted.
My mom figured out I was at a club. She made me come home. She
Yeah.
Why are you wet?
She's taking college courses, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Clown college. Oh, yeah. Like the rules can be broken. That's the M. Night way. I'll break the rules whenever I damn well please. I made them up, so fuck you. She's far too pretty to be in this movie. It's like, honey, you are so cute. No, I have no idea. But she's a cutie pie.
She's the hot Asian chick.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Whether it's billiards or M. Night movies, you have to have the hot Asian chick.
Absolutely.
Or for that matter, Descent, although she turned out to be Latina.
And evil.
There is that.
She got what she deserved.
Boy, she... We all do, honey.
Cleveland Heap.
Cleveland Heap. Yeah. I'm sure that's in the six-part documentary. I laugh, but I might actually watch the six-part documentary tomorrow just before I take it back going... Because I want to know where he came from on this. Going, really? Really? Am I?
I know you've been dismissive of what the story is, but can you intellectually justify the story? Can you say, I kind of see what he's going for? I understand.
No, it's all about like sending her back to the motherland or something. I don't even remember, to be honest.
You can dislike something and say, yeah, but I can at least, I got a sense of what he's going for here.
Well, he's going for sci-fi cocoony whimsy. I mean, he's going for Ron Howard in Cocoon, Spielberg in everything. Something that's kind of wraps you up in this fairy tale universe where it's like, oh, I'm 8 years old and I do believe again. I think all of his motives are good ones. I just think it's inept.
It's a scrunt.
It's a scrunt. Good for you for noticing that. Yeah, that's a scrunt.
And it's green, too.
Yeah.
It lies completely flat with its back covered in grass and it can hide.
You've obviously been paying attention. And obviously, he's read The Shining, right?
Yeah.
How many shots of his bald spot? I mean, this is like...
Yeah, you gotta kind of feel bad for Paul. He's not being photographed all that flat.
No, I mean, that's at least the third prominent shot of his bald spot. And you wouldn't normally shoot a scene like this from a high angle like that. It's almost like, I'm going to show his bald spot. Like,
yeah, maybe he made fun of his writing or something. Into rehearsal. Oh, I'll get even.
Or maybe what he wants to do is, since he's cast a Howard twice, he wants to say, I want you to remember that Ron Howard is bald and I am not.
Yeah, you're a little tied up in this bald issue there, I think, my friend.
I got the jeans. Now look at this. Look at this head of hair I have. Uh-huh. I have a full head of hair. He's a very handsome man, I think.
He's prettier than he is handsome.
I think he's handsome. I don't see the prettiness.
Yeah, I think he's a little pretty.
I think I like those eyes, the way they droop down to the sides make me... I think that's not beautiful. I don't think it doesn't strike me as pretty, but...
Yeah. But I dislike him so much I want to punch him, so I don't care.
Yeah. I do like his American Express commercial a little bit. It's kind of fun.
Which one is that?
He just sees a whole bunch of weird shit in a restaurant. Kind of neat.
I thought he was first.
Oh, here we go. She's telling him all about him. Oh, yeah. There's this little boy.
Isn't there also one where he's telling his kids a bedtime story, actually? The American Express commercial?
I don't know. Your writing, M. Night, will inspire a boy to be president.
Wait, this is about this is about Barack Obama.
He will speak of you and your words. I mean, really? What kind of masturbatory fantasy do you have to be living in?
It's one thing to write that. It's another thing to write it and have her say it to you.
To you. That's the only reason it's so hateful. It's like, are you kidding with that? That no one would call you on it. Who would call him on it, though? Critics. But he's taking care of them. He's got his book and film critic for the local paper to contend with. He'll get his revenge yet.
Poor Rico.
Poor Rico with his prosthetic arm. Oh, my God. It's spicy the way you Asians like it.
I'm hungry again.
Oh! Yeah, I can't even drink a glass of milk without...
Now, he drank it, and yet it ended up on his mustache. How did he do that?
And spitting out his...
That's adorable.
Oh, because he's supposed to be childlike.
He's supposed to be childlike.
And all dribbly and innocent, and I get it.
Oh, my God. I want to just put a bullet in my head. You have to blow her.
He has to lay down like he's having a nap. Oh, my God. Now I feel sorry for him.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't until this moment, but that's it.
Fundamentally, this is something that's supposed to be about storytelling and about the
look at this
relevance and relevance and importance of storytelling. And yet, to do that in any meaningful way, you have to be able to tell a story.
They were just fucking with him, weren't they?
Yeah. No. Oh, the characters, you mean?
Yeah.
No. The mother was actually legitimately charmed by this.
Oh, I thought they were giggling like, no. See what else we could make him do.
No, mother was very happy that he's acting like a child.
Oh my.
Now she'll tell him the story.
Oh my God.
Right, it's an irony-free universe.
Holy crap. What's the point of living?
Right.
You know what I did when I was a little girl and me and my girlfriend would get in big trouble? My mom always wanted to know what happened. But I was like, I can't tell my friends. So she came up with this way of me telling something with your mom. She would say, put your ear or something if the answer is yes. So I would, and then she would know certain things.
How, why is this explanation taking 10 years? We all get it. We all get it. Even the Narf would get it.
Would get it.
Oh my God. It's worse than I remember.
The Narf has come to a preordained place. She must leave from this same spot. This eagle, the great eagle, coming to take her back, is really very...
What would be... what would you compare this movie to?
As far as, like, sheer embarrassments?
No. If you were to try to say, okay, what is the touchstone that he was trying to emulate? I think
E.T. and Wizard of Oz.
E.T. was the thing that I thought of. The Wizard of Oz I don't get yet.
Oh, no, just because it's a timeless fable. It's...
That's a yes! Oh, my God!
Oh, my God.
A symbolist, a guardian, and a guild. Ask her if that's right.
You want something. One of them. Big. Mr. Heap.
It's like the most boring charades game of all time.
Which one? Guild, guardian. She thinks Mr. Heap is the guardian.
The music, obviously we have it turned down, but the music obviously has this great import, this great suspense, like something important is being revealed here. And, but it's really not, is it?
No, nothing's happening, but the music's sure convinced that it is. I hear my coffee is going to inspire somebody to grow a coffee bean field one day.
And the boys have to hang out and not see her naked.
Right.
What's with the sign language? The faux sign language craziness.
There's one other. I don't know if it's worth mentioning. It's not in the story. It's a human, usually a female, so full of hope that they can awaken the life force.
You mean she always wanted to believe in the ghost she saw in the basement?
Mm-hmm.
Not that because butterflies are drawn.
I've been paying attention.
Obviously, I haven't been because I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about. I obviously do not have the skill to be watching something for the first time.
I don't either. That's why I had such a problem with the Loch Ness movie. Yeah.
Learning.
I'm just watching and coughing.
She thinks it has to be learned.
Is the eagle going to come back for her?
Only one last time. Mister, you know the people in this building. You have to find them.
You know all of the stereotypes.
You know every last caricature here. Is this the film and book critic?
Hey. You know these walls are paper thin. My computer
won't plug in those back stairs like the one in my kitchen. Can you do
anything about that? I'm guessing it was the blacks
who lived below. The stoners.
No, it's the stoners. No, the blacks are nice and respectable. They do crossword puzzles.
They do crossword puzzles. They're quiet.
Quietly.
Yeah,
I just mean generally.
They don't cause any problems.
Right. Because Jeffrey Wright said, you ain't pulling that shit.
Critics don't like originality. We hate it.
How long is this movie, Mike?
4.5 hours
long. Fuck.
The Stoners?
I'm hoping it's one of those 85-minuters.
No, I'm sure it's 2 hours. Let's find out. They're all 2 hours, at least. Oh.
The Blacks.
Hour 50.
If it were 130 minutes, I was pretty sure I was going to have to get a shotgun.
Yeah.
I'm not going to mention this too many more times, but look at the male pattern baldness of Jeffrey Wright.
My goodness.
Boy, you are obsessed, dude. Really, it's an issue. I think you should talk to someone.
I got the genes for it, so.
But for any group of characters that are always seen together. And they're seemingly irrelevant and tedious.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my god.
And you just sit around and talk about nothing. Talk about serious issues.
So Gene Simmons or Howard?
I was actually thinking it's it's Mark Boone Jr. mixed with Kirk Hammett.
That's just the right.
And it's not further in the story, jackass. It's later in the story. He can't even... there's no such thing as a creature. I keep coming back to that because it's the most ridiculous statement I've ever heard. Of course there are creatures, you idiot.
But, I mean, if a character says something stupid, that's the character being stupid. I mean, it's not... We can't necessarily fault...
No, this is an indirect choice on the part of the author. I think that's very obvious.
There's one other person. Mrs. Bell, could you come in here, please? There's Mrs. Bell.
Giamatti is the smartest one in the movie. I mean, of course, he's our hero. He's not. They're not going to have him accidentally say something that.
Fair enough.
You know.
Dude,
and that's one of those narrative miscalculations as well, that he only makes PG-13 movies and yet he has a character who is ostensibly naked all the time. You have to shoot her in extreme close-up, which is very difficult for any performer, I think, or else you have to shoot at those weird angles like that straight down angle so that you can, and she has to be scrunched up so that you never see anything. Mm-hmm. like an ass cheek or a breast or pubic hair.
Right, yeah.
I'm fascinated by the fact that he could collect this group of people and not one of them has said to anybody else, do you think maybe we should take him to the hospital?
No, they're into it. They're really into it.
Yeah.
You know?
If my weird, stuttering building manager came to me and took me to see this naked girl in his shower...
Six-letter word for get-together. Orgy. Oh, damn.
That's only four letters.
A boy can help, right?
Yeah. Two extra letters would be...
God,
add two to the orgy.
Yeah.
That was the one time I remember laughing at the theater. I was like, oh, finally. I mean, intentionally.
If we all rub against her.
Oh, now it's Dogville.
Manderley.
There we go. Nicely done. Yes.
That would be a non sequitur, but not really because it relates to the
question. I just don't understand why she doesn't talk. I mean, she was talking plenty before, and now she can't speak.
Hundreds of people. At a party, it won't work. It won't work. See if there's
any hundreds. Party. That's how many people come to your barbecue.
It's like that Deus Ex Machina, you know, the two of God. The story requires that you not talk twice or something. Oh, there's this little handheld camera. Obviously, it's meant to be her point of view, but it's.
Ish, yeah, kind of. Yeah. He's trying so hard. God love him. And he doesn't care. He's like, I'm in it for 5 minutes. Fine. I'm just going to do my job and get the fuck out.
And get my check.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, no points. I'll take my money up front.
No, I'm good. I'm good. Just the check will be fine.
Yeah.
I'm feeling generous. You all can have the back end.
Yeah.
Feeling good about this one. I think you're going to thank me later.
And they always tease you with her nudity that they'll never show you.
Right.
Oh, the eyes wide shut solution. A body in front of the...
Right, neck. Yeah. Just put more Giamatti arm hair in front of it.
Can you comb it over from your arm to cover your bald spot?
Hmm. In his case, probably. Or his back.
She and Katie, definitely. From his back end.
And now she's out of the shower, but still not talking.
The cinematography of her, I think the cinematography is essentially based on her, because there's that kind of... there's that kind of golden tone right now, and then the porcelain pale earlier, I think works.
Uh-huh. This movie is very orange.
Oh, here's... This scene's pretty funny, as I remember.
Now she's talking.
Yeah. Oh, and boy, does she soon. She turns into, like, Arlie Ermey.
Narf and Skrunt are troubling to me in the same way I'm troubled by
George Lucas.
George Lucas, but also I think the Harry Potter movies. I think things are, you know, I don't remember what the word is, but there's the word that says the sound of the word reflects what it means.
Onomatopoetic?
Yes. And I guess the antonym of that is something where the name doesn't match what it is. Mm-hmm. And it seems like Skrunt and Narf, I mean, we tend to name things appropriately. I mean,
Yeah.
And they seem wrong, and I find the same problem in Harry Potter stuff a lot of the time.
Well, I don't think the Skrunt is... Wrong.
Skrunt, I think, is okay. She doesn't really look like a Narf. He looks
like a Narf. See, that thing is... A Skrunt, I think, should be smaller and less powerful.
Okay.
Skrunt, I mean, what I think of Runt. I mean, it's
which
Runt.
Is an improvement over the other word you could be thinking.
Runt plus, well, I thought of that one, too. That's better than Skruntum, I guess, right? Is that the singular? It's a Skruntum?
No, I was thinking, taking the S.
Oh, okay,
and
gotcha.
The R.
Gotcha. It's either Runt with a sk or cunt with a sur.
This is so
in fairness, the CGI isn't terrible here. Better than I'm used to.
In case you want to see how that exciting scene turned out, you don't get to.
Yeah.
Well, it's the Chris Carter solution. Creating suspense artificially by refusing to show something. People in M. Night movies. Why does everyone like to stand around and talk in the rain in movies? The odd thing is, as much as that character is meant to represent the bankruptcy of film criticism, he seems to be the only one who's speaking any truth at all.
Oh yeah, he's the only sane one. Absolutely.
He's actually the most sensible character.
He's the reason he doesn't see the Skrunt?
Yeah, because he's, you know,
lives in the real world.
Devoid of the ability to see. Yeah. Again, it's like Jonathan's girlfriend spent 10 minutes telling me the other night when her play in Chicago I went and saw got trashed by critics.
I always thought that she was sort of imaginary.
You know? Oh no, she's real. Yeah. But yeah. And she said it's because critics don't understand artists. And I went, oh really? Yeah. Okay.
Well, you don't have to understand artists to be a critic. You have to talk about what they produce. I don't think a knowledge of process is necessarily helpful.
See, in a different movie, that would be kind of a fun shot.
So what does the Skrunt represent? I mean, if this is obviously meant to be a... I mean, things in fairy tales represent other things. Any good psycho... Anybody who's taken any course that deals in any way with psychoanalysis would...
Well, that leaves me out then.
I'll give you the crash course. The wolf represents nature and also maleness and sexual aggression, okay. Whereas the Little Red Riding Hood represents the female innocence. Okay. The red cloak, menstrual blood, maturation, the dangers of sexuality, things of that nature. That's kind of the long and the short version.
Okay.
It pretty much applies to everything. Slipper equals, slipper equals vagina also.
Alright.
It's not a glass slipper in the original.
Well, that sucks all the fun out of fairy tales, don't it?
If it's not supposed, it's actually not a glass slipper.
Vagina's running around.
It's not a glass slipper. It's a fur slipper, actually. It's a mistranslation that converted to a glass slipper.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Okay. Fur slipper, huh?
Yeah. That's a euphemism.
Goodness.
My point being is that, I mean, fairy tales folk tales last because they are meaningful.
Yeah.
They are metaphors whose lessons can be easily understood, even if perhaps the symbolism isn't quite.
Sure, right.
Yeah. You know.
That's the thing about, right. Thing
I mean,
about
evil course. Stepmothers represent what happens with, I mean, are fundamentally a fairly perceptive understanding of blended families, for example.
Oh, well, I won the Oscar. Here it comes.
That's kind of a very Michael Jackson suck. Thing going on right there.
Or Spencer Press.
Change doesn't happen the way you say it's going to happen. They're dramatic events that accelerate thinking. this thing. It might take decades or longer.
This has...
Oh, my God.
...before it anchors it in consciousness.
He's planning.
It's not the type of change you tell them is going to happen, right?
He knows they're not going to understand this for years.
But
they
but
will.
When we do.
And someone will be president.
Barack Obama? He'll be going into his fourth term. And, I mean, there's something
more. I don't want to hear my truths.
There's something.
Serve my hand. It's a good book.
There's something oracular about this, about the whiteness and the.
Oracular. Well.
I think I probably made that up. But the brightness and the paleness of her skin and the it's kind of otherworldly here. Like this is the. Something divine, almost. I didn't like The Matrix, but what I liked, speaking of oracular, what I really liked about the Oracle scenes was how mundane they were, and how grounded in speaking of made-up words, mundanity, they
yes.
were.
That's pretty bad.
Versus this very literal otherworldliness when she's essentially holding court. The way they're separated by that wall reminds me of the split screen that Darren Aronofsky used in Requiem for a Dream, where the characters' heads were inches apart, and the split screen essentially got rid of about 2 inches, probably, but it emphasized that division.
Yeah, it's a brilliant shot. It's very smart.
Thanks.
Is that Leia?
Excuse me.
I'll tell your sister. Tell your sister she was right.
That's a cool looking shot. It's very disorienting, but it was really cool at first because it was. What is the shape of that pool exactly?
Is that an artichoke? Isn't that a style of pool? An artichoke shaped pool?
I think so.
I just don't know if that's one of them. But will anyone talk to you? No. Why? It's your film critic.
I wanted to thank you. I was completely surprised by all of this. I was expecting some kind of reading, of course. But this is beyond my expectations. I'm 13B.
Oh, yeah. Good for you.
I'm reminded of the first season of NYPD Blue when David Caruso's character refers to David Schwimmer, who was actually sleeping with his ex-wife, as 4B, and through the entirety of until he gets shot by a by a, somebody in his laundry room.
That was his that was his claim to fame before Friends. Absolutely,
he played 4B.
He did. I think that's
and I think the scary thing is that's probably exactly what it was. It was 4B, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, no, he was very well known for that for, you know, for quite a while. When that when Friends first started, they were all like, "Oh, 4B's got a sitcom." So.
There's disconnect between Madam and Narf. I mean, they just don't they don't work
Madam
together.
Narf.
She never gets sick because she's actually that's a different movie. She's actually Poncho Man.
Poncho?
Bruce Willow. That's his superhero name. Poncho Man.
Poncho Man.
You know, because he puts on the rain slicker and all of a sudden...
Oh, yeah.
It's
okay to be scared.
I feel she means it. No, I really don't want to be...
I think there's a. I think the biggest problem with this movie is that it is so self-serious and so self-important in a way. Again, we're talking about what is a fairy tale, what is the essence of a fairy tale or a bedtime story. a bedtime story, it always emphasizes its artificiality. This is so... It is so bluntly a metaphor and so meant to be so meaningful.
Oh, it's the seriousness that kills it. It's the belief in its own bullshit. It's the same reason Cats sucks ass. It's a belief in your own crap.
Hey, watch it on Cats.
Cats sucks ass. I've actually
never seen Cats, so...
It sucks ass. It's because it thinks it's, you know, actually...
She's going to see that greeny thing. So home for her is that little thing in the ground?
Well, there's a big eagle or something that's going to take her away, I think.
Roger, read my journal. Don't worry. We're all watching.
So they basically had a big party.
Yeah, they have to have a party.
To throw the tartan, whatever.
Oh, I love that you're learning.
Off the scent of her.
Okay. I remember that bit.
Poor Freddy.
That was Jeffrey Wright who told us about that, right?
Yes, I think.
Can't they, like, turn the sprinklers off during the party?
Maybe they're, again, trying to, you know, throw off the scent. Look at this. Oh, it's all so well choreographed.
Oh, come on, the music should start already.
Were there any credits at the beginning?
Not that
do
I remember.
Not leave this spot.
That's always a sign of the second point movie.
Were they?
Yeah.
Like more like
I just remember the opening thing
water.
And the title.
Oh.
Yeah. Find a mirror.
It's a lot of fucking.
I bet the one-armed bandit would be really good if they ever made a show about like a funeral home or something.
Well, he'd have to have, like, two normal arms.
He'd have to be kind of Weasley and dweeby.
Have nobody
a
held
a wife.
His hair back. So...
Oh, no. Something is about to happen.
But nothing is.
Music indicates to me that I should be anxious.
I think the word you're looking for is eager.
So there's still 40 minutes of this left?
Music started.
No, 25.
We've been playing with it all night.
Okay.
You used up the battery. Wave to him.
It could be trying
or
to...
Or walk the 10 feet and talk
yeah.
to him.
It could be that I'm trying to talk about something that I haven't seen before, but it seems like there's nothing at stake here. I mean, that's fundamentally...
She's gotten all scratched up. There's serious stuff at stake.
But to do that, you have to give a shit. And
I know. No, I'm kidding. I mean, because I honestly don't have any idea what happens if she doesn't get home. Did the scrunt just snatch her up?
Yeah, but they didn't have the CGI budget to actually show it.
No, in effect, too expensive to show. Oh, I'm fine. Don't worry.
I felt that it was better to maybe withhold the scrunt at that point.
Put her in the shower!
Now she's all blonde.
Sometimes animals just
drop dead. Words to live by. Indeed. How's Ginger? Is she okay? She's okay.
She's breathing.
Sometimes they just look dead.
Sometimes they come back. Again.
Oh, again. See, you're awake, aren't you, sweet pea?
Come on. Where's the best scene ever? It's coming momentarily.
The baby. My wheels. The scrunt got inside.
Crap.
Trapped inside the building with a scrunt.
So right in the middle with you.
What about the that kind of fake monster in red that they had in the village? Wasn't that sort of Skrunt-like or meant to be Skrunt-like?
Yeah, I guess, right? It had kind of a vaguely werewolfy and... Yeah.
It was
lycanthropic.
It was a reversal of the Red Riding Hood motif of the blood.
Yes.
Because
it sure was red. He does like his red, and I, you know, very meaningful to him.
I think in this shot he seems to like the eggplant.
I don't know. Yeah, right. He's getting into a pastel kind of period here. I mean, God bless these actors for keeping a straight face. How? Sing your own kind of music.
Thank you, Mama Cass.
On a plot level, do we have any indication why these people have bought into this at
they
all?
They just do.
Okay.
They do. They buy
except
it.
Except for the critic.
Okay.
Who isn't imaginative enough to get it.
But we're not quite done with him yet.
I didn't doubt that.
He gets dragged off by a scrunt, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. Bad things will happen to the film and book critic for the local paper.
Thank goodness you don't do books.
Right? That's why I tell people when they call, I'm like, we don't cover books. We don't.
Are you a scrunt?
No, I think they are, and that's why I can't.
No, I'm asking. Yes, you ask them on the phone.
Oh, that, right? Yeah.
Why would you ask? Why?
Well,
you got to stop telling people you don't cover books, because then they don't send you books, and then I don't get to read them.
They'll send books anyway.
They will send books anyway.
Even though
Stink
David Sedaris books.
Here we go. Best scene in the show.
Because... He doesn't even see the scrunt.
Because he's jaded.
Yeah.
So they wanted to get Wallace Shawn, didn't they?
No.
Oh, no, I bet they went for Balaban.
Yeah.
Oh. Shoot. He's who I'd call first.
Yep.
For film and book critic.
Yeah, you bet.
Well, you're not a dog at all.
See, I would have... Well, there's your Wizard of Oz reference. Oh, my God.
This is like a moment.
I'm not a witch at all. Are you a good witch or a bad witch? I'm not a witch at all. You're not a dog at all.
Attempt to kill an unlikable side character. But in stories where
I don't think he's actually being anti-critic. I like that shot right there, actually. Not that shot, the one before it, where it was the reflection. I don't think he's actually being anti-critic with this character. I think he's meant as the... I mean, he's the Greek chorus. He's the metatextual element.
That's giving it a whole bunch of credit. That's very sweet.
See, I don't see animosity toward this character. I think he's...
No, I don't either.
I think he's the...
We will in just a second.
I don't think there's animosity toward that character, and I think that it is meant as... comic relief and essentially stepping outside and reminding us that we're watching a narrative and that this is a story.
No, she's story.
I understand that. But and then, but I think the tone is all wrong. There's no lightness.
I don't know if I agree. I'm sitting there thinking about it.
I think he's consistently
referred to as the closed-minded one. His conversation about why do people kiss in the rain,
but
he's not an observation on why do they kiss in the rain. It's because we love it when they do kiss in the rain. You asshole! You are too jaded to understand the leap of faith required to enjoy watching people kiss in the rain. He's over it.
But it's a fair question, and I think it's
you see, that's because you're the grumpy critic. You know, you're the one who doesn't want to see people kissing in the rain. The rest of us,
I don't have a problem seeing the critic in the rain, and I really, as much as I make fun of it, I really don't mind Oskar Schindler falling to his knees and saying, I could have saved more.
We love that shit. That's when we get to cry. Yeah.
I think Waffle Crisp is the secret.
Almost true.
Thank God.
He's like Walt.
He is like Walt.
apparently Walt had some sort of contract dispute or else got caught with a DUI or something.
No, he's just aging.
We were referencing Lost, of course. And the tendency of people who get DUIs to be unceremoniously killed off.
He didn't get a DUI, did he, in real life?
We're joking.
Okay.
But everybody
yeah, Walt is 8 years old, so.
Oh, yeah.
And Lucia and Mr. Echo both got DUIs, as did...
And Libby.
Yeah? Fucking... Oh, no,
oh, Lord.
See, Mexicans, they reproduce a lot.
Darling, get off the can!
And two others, the Chinese ladies.
Sweetheart?
He's probably rinsing his mouth. He's got terrible breath. Don't tell him, don't you?
Stop.
Yeah, yeah. I hurt at the end of this movie from the cultural stereotypes. There is not, however, a gay couple that I can recall. Even a harmless lesbian couple.
Not even harmless that, lesbian think. One, as opposed
there's,
to...
There's no such thing. You know. They're all insidious forces in our culture.
Well, that's probably why they have no place in Giamatti's building. You know.
That's right.
They're Stoners. Like critics, but worse. So.
Stoners.
I feel a realization that the motivating... The driving force behind M. Night is his homophobia.
Really?
Oh, God. Face Tyus again.
No.
Like, this isn't the lady in the water. This is the scrunt in the dryer.
And with the red Riding Hood cape swirling in the dryer. Right?
Yeah. That's.
Someone's peeing.
It looks like diarrhea, actually, from like the sixth floor.
Who are all these people?
That doesn't sound like Dylan.
No, it's the worst Dylan impersonator I've ever heard.
The eagle!
Scrat!
Is it that thing from Rudolph's Happy New Year? That big buzzard?
Oh, could be.
And what is the name?
I don't know.
Isn't there an Ignatius in Rudolph's Happy New
yes,
Year?
Yes, I thought you were talking about that.
Pterodactyl. That's like a buzzard, I think.
You're right.
No one wants... You're right. No one wants to corrupt this mandolin again. It's amazing.
So this is about a union, right? I mean, the guild equals unions.
Come on, you're dark-skinned. You'll count.
That's right. Are you Mexican? No.
Close enough.
Okay, that's right.
Get over it.
The only thing he didn't say was, you all look alike to me.
Yeah.
I honestly did not expect this to be as bad as it is. I figured there would be... And even though I hated the village, I thought there was potential within it. There was a theme. There were themes that were interesting. There were ideas.
Absolutely.
No,
this is like... This is like remedial filmmaking. I mean, this is.
You know, there are things
like he made it 20 years ago. You know,
I don't think I could have fundamentally seen a more inept movie than Silent Hill. I appreciated some of the things Silent Hill was going for, but generally as a narrative, it was
it's beyond clunky. Yeah.
Yes, this is worse than Silent Hill.
Yeah. Now, you are welcome to keep this for a few days if you'd like to watch it again.
Hell no.
Oh, what? Did the whole thing all come together now?
7-on-1.
Oh, I didn't even think... Huh?
Oh, wow.
Oh,
that's
possibly be? How could it possibly be me?
I can't do it. Poor Bill Irwin. What is he doing in this? I just... Ugh.
Man, you've got some buttons. Use them.
Who, Paul or Bill?
Paul. He's like one button away from his navel.
This is like when Mia Farrow changed her haircut, you know, in Rosemary's Baby. Like,
see, look how blonde she is. Yeah. She's not redheaded.
Oh, there we go. That's what I was waiting for. Thank you.
May the Lord bless and keep you.
Ah, I appreciate that. It's not working. I did that once, but it was dirty.
I could have saved more.
You person I didn't meet a day and a half ago.
Guilt I'm pouring out.
The one? She never made faces. She had the blank stoic thing
now,
the whole movie.
It's your faces, my wife, my children. I could have saved them if I'd been there.
Oh, see.
He had a wife and children?
Yes, it came out in the diary.
Oh, right, okay. Oh, yeah.
And he was a doctor.
Oh, so it's just like that Sandler movie I saw today. Okay.
Exactly
the same.
Yes.
Exactly the same, actually, yeah.
And he's driven into his true self underground. Out of guilt.
Oh dear.
We didn't even have to show that with CGI.
No, in effect, too expensive to show. You know, it's okay when you can just tell the story. You know?
It's too expensive. It's too expensive to show to you.
I'm sorry. You can't.
You're not worth the expense of this effect.
That's right.
Not bad, dog Ginger. Why don't you lie down?
I've been very good for like 2 hours, Daddy.
Yeah, but you made your Uncle Mike spill wine.
Yeah, which cleaned up really nice.
Actually, you spilled your Uncle Mike's wine. That's what you ought to say.
Yeah.
No.
Knocked it right out of my hand.
She did go from redhead to blonde.
But now she's confirming.
I was thinking this might be light or something like that, but...
Who are all you freaks with the pool cleaning instruments?
So she's like E.T. gone pale here?
Yeah, that was her E.T. moment.
Okay. So those pool cleaning instruments remind me, and I know you're going to kill me, Mike, because you liked it, remind me of all the people in the masks in V for Vendetta.
How do you see that? As equitable?
Just reminded me of it, actually.
The composition, you mean? Compositionally? Or?
No, just everybody with...
Kind of serious faces?
No, with the same instruments.
Oh, okay.
They'll fight you off with brooms.
Yeah, and a squeegee, apparently.
Isn't there a martial art that uses a squeegee?
If not, there should be.
Look, it's beady-eyed Bill Self. So why did the door open that way?
Right. Yeah, there's no reason for that.
I mean, it could be, you know, you push something toward it, it hits it and bounces back, but...
No, that was just inept. See, the camera comes really close, but that actual creature doesn't. I'm sorry, there are no such things as creatures.
That's right.
The scrunt doesn't, yeah.
Well, that shot was just stolen from Evil Dead 2.
Yeah, everything is, though. It is the greatest movie ever.
Give me back my hand...
Yes.
Groovy.
I haven't seen Evil Dead 2 in 20 years.
I probably haven't seen it in at least 15, but I did watch it probably about 20 times when I saw it last.
That's why I should wear contacts, asshole. It's not gonna...
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
It's a good, well done CGI right there.
Food, he was so shocked, you know.
So this Grunts is actually a good guy? Or is Reggie the good guy?
Reggie's a good guy.
Okay.
Reggie's great.
And his freaky arm. And his freaky leg.
It's just like that, it's just like that Powerade commercial.
Yes.
No, Reggie,
Reggie,
no.
Don't look away.
The monkeys.
Oh, the good scrunts who are down with them.
Scrunt monkeys.
There's a band.
Scrunt monkeys.
That's a good
band name. The scrunts who don't break the law.
I love Sean's band today. Dead Sea Squirrels. That's brilliant.
Oh, I love it.
I too.
Scrunt Monkey is pretty good, though.
Scrunt Monkey is great.
To go back to your Wizard of Oz thing, the flying monkeys.
Yeah.
Except benevolent in this case.
A reversal. Is that a hint of maybe a breast? Just like an indication that maybe there's something
there.
She has
one. I mean, after all this time she spent naked?
Yeah. Yes. Like maybe a little swell.
That she's not actually built like
Yeah, to force your leading character to be naked the whole time but never letting the audience see it just seems a little bit awful on part of the filmmaker, because he does get to see it
all the time.
All the time. Sorry, audience, you can't, but I did for 3 months. Ha-ha! Oh, and that's, by the way, the big special effect ending. No reflection in a pool.
Okay.
That's
again, ran out of money, did you?
Ran out of a little bit of cash. A little cash flow problem. We don't get to see the effect, but we sure do see them impressed by it. Just another night in Philadelphia, folks. And that complex is beautiful, but it doesn't look like Philadelphia at all.
Like, no, it looks like something you'd see in Florida.
Philadelphia, right.
Philadelphia. California. When I think of Philly, I think of...
It's really good, huh?
That's what the titles look like in the beginning, too.
I just saw the title of the movie.
Okay.
That was as awful as everybody said it was.
Yeah.
But I'm sure in 30 years we'll feel much differently about it.
That's right.
Well, really, one of our children might be president because of this movie.
Ginger, you're going to have to get to work on that.
It's really something, that's for sure. But I might actually watch some of the documentary stuff, because nothing is more entertaining than M. Night talking about his movies. He is so full of himself. I mean, the Sixth Sense extras are hysterical at how much he loves his own shit.
Well, there was after this movie was released and did poorly at the box office, he suggested that perhaps he should have, it might have been a better idea if he would have taken his name off it, because people come to an M. Night movie with a certain expectations, and they need to be open to the idea that they need to prepare themselves for a new cinematic language. Something...
Oh, that's pretty good.
The phrasing was something like a new cinematic grammar or language that the idea that this was something they'd never seen before and they couldn't comprehend
wow.
it.
Wow. That was Tova Feltsche who played the old Jewish lady. Oh, I didn't know that. I like her. Do you see Kissing Jessica Stein by chance?
No.
Did you guys remember that? It's kind of cute. She's really good in that. And I forgot Mary Beth Hurt was the old lady. Oh, who I love. Boy, so many good people. What a shame.
You've seen it twice now.
Yeah.
Is there anything redeeming about it?
No, of course not. No, it's.
I mean, are you being serious about that?
I'm serious. It's humiliatingly bad. There's really no worse thing than so recklessly wasting talent. I mean, and obviously, it's a good cast. Obviously, it's a talented cinematographer. Obviously, it's these are professionals who should know how to do their job and probably do it with a certain degree of dedication. I mean, all these people are doing it because for whatever reason, but. They're probably trying real hard. It's just that it's a fundamentally stupid-ass movie. And it's stupidly designed. It's badly done. It's, it's a big M. Night piece of poo. And he's the one to blame. There's no one else to blame at the end. The director, is always responsible.
Written, directed, and produced by.
Yeah, and with a sizable role. Pretty sizable role, all things considered.
Normally he just walks through, right?
He does his little Hitchcock cameo, I remember waiting all throughout the village. I'm like, well, how can he do it? This is the most white bread community I've ever seen. Oh, look at how clever he was.
Yeah,
he found a way, didn't he? Yeah.
And he has bad judgment in that way because he has similarly... And his role in
Signs.
In Signs was very small, but it was critical. I mean,
oh, yeah. No, he was...
He killed the wife.
He killed the wife.
Because he was drunk.
Yeah. He's... I can't remember what he did in Unbreakable offhand.
He was a guard at the stadium. No, he was... Okay. No, he was... he got frisked at the stadium.
Mm. All
right. Got frisked by Bruce Willis at some point.
Okay.
Anybody have any closing comments before we...
Let's do one that we've all seen because we need to get back on that. Yeah, one we like that we've all seen, I think, would be good.
One that we agree we all like. Well, that's going to be fun. That's going to be hard to figure.
To find something that we all like? You kidding? We own a whole bunch of the same.
I'm kidding.
Well, see, you're too subtle for me.
So. Thank you for listening. If you did, we're very sorry. If you were listening while watching, we're really, really,
really
sorry.
No, hopefully, that's you need to have seen this first.
But that means I've seen it twice now.
Right, yeah. See, that's the thing. You've
seen it once? Shame on me. See it twice? No, wait. See it once? Shame on you. See it twice? Shame on me.
Watch Lady Noir. That's just rude.
Oh, good night. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.